Dan, thank you for joining us on the Calling Hours podcast. I'm excited to kind of dig into your history at Homesteaders and your history in the profession and just the breadth of expertise that you have. And I know that our listeners will be excited to hear from you as well. So I wanted to start by kind of going back just a handful of years to when you first got into the funeral profession. It's not necessarily one that comes to the top of every person's mind. I don't know a lot of little kids who grow up wanting to be funeral directors, wanting to work in the funeral space, wanting to work in sales. What attracted you to the space initially?
Well, it wasn't necessarily the funeral profession in that space that I was attracted to. I was attracted to a sales opening. I'd gotten out of college. I got a sociology degree from the University of Northern Iowa. And I knew even before I got out of college that I was probably going to have a career in sales. And so this was an insurance company that had a sales opening. What I didn't realize was the focus that it had in the funeral profession. And I quickly learned that when I was hired by a third generation funeral director. And he had me go to his family funeral homes. And I did all the things that funeral home does and what their staff does to keep the business running and providing the great services to the families that they serve.
So, fun fact, sociology was my very first college class. It's a really interesting field of study, but I think sociology and psychology really do serve you well in the sales profession.
Oh, totally agree.
How did you end up at Homesteaders? What were those first few years like for you?
Well, I clearly remember the first day. I remember the first presenter who was in our training class, and he got up and on the whiteboard, he wrote down the word no and looked at us and said, "Do you know what no means?" And we quickly learned that no does not mean never. It simply means not right now at this moment. They'd never had a sales representative. We had some third-party marketers working with Homesteaders, and we'd just gotten into the funding of prearranged funerals. So there were no CRMs back then. Cell phones were invented, but none of us had a cell phone. And there's a book, a publication called The Red Book. It's kind of like a phone book for funeral homes. I was handed the Red Book and the pages from the state of Iowa and said, "Here you go. These are the funeral homes that you're going to go call on." And I knew of the handful that were currently working with us with one of the organ agencies. Didn't call on those to begin with. I called on all the funeral homes who were not doing business with Homesteaders. So it was look at a map and pick a town and the highway that gets you there and start driving. And once you get there, you got to go find where those funeral homes are located. And I will never forget that first call I made. I walked into the funeral home and introduced myself and told them that we fund prearranged funerals. And during training, I was told that every funeral home does prearrangements. And the owner of this funeral home looked me square in the eye and said, "I don't do prearrangements. When my families come in and want to do a prearrangement with me, I just simply send them to the bank and tell them to make a deposit at the bank." So here it was. I was told everybody does prearranging at the funeral home. In the first call I made, he educated me that he does not. Well, it was a form of prearranging. It was just one where they simply put the funds in a bank trust to be there at the time of the death. But nobody sat down and picked out any services or merchandise at that funeral home. So that was actually, in hindsight, a good first call for me.
Go back a little bit to what you'd said initially about no meaning not yet, and being in a sales role, knowing that you're going to get lots of no's, and you've been in sales for a number of years now. I'm sure you've had experiences where you have had a lot of no's, a lot of discouragement. Building resilience through those no's is not something that comes naturally to everyone. I'm sure it didn't come naturally to you. I'm curious, how did you build the resilience to be able to go back to that funeral home again, or to go to the next call with the same level of confidence you had before you got that no?
A big part of training was that this is a relationship business. And it was clearly explained to us that you didn't have to go out and get a yes the first time you met each one of these funeral home opportunities. And so that helped to make it easier, knowing that I did have a base pay that I could lean on for seeing to it that the bills got paid and food was put on the table. And to focus more on building relationships. So that's where I started, but I would ask for the sale and I got a lot of no's. So as I was building the relationship and in between calls, I started to realize I needed a process that would take them through the explanation of how Homesteaders might be the best fit for them and the families that they serve. And once I developed that process, it became easier because the relationship had been established. They knew who I was. And then I started to demonstrate why this was a good fit for them. And once I had that process, no's started to become yeses. And then yeses started to become more frequent. And what I didn't know is that what a tight-knit community the funeral profession is, those that started to work with me were having good experiences with Homesteaders Life Company, and they were starting to tell their friends about it. So then yeses became easier because the referrals were happening, and I didn't even realize that a referral was happening. They were telling me, if you see Dan come by, you should take the time to listen to him. So it was a combination of developing relationships and not being too pushy, in that when I heard no, no just meant not right now, not right at this moment, but it could be next month, it could be next year, that no would turn into a yes.
I love that. I mean, such a compliment to get those referrals, that people have enough trust in you that they're telling their colleagues, hey, if he comes by, let him in, hear what he has to say. I love that. I want to talk a little bit about how our account executive program has grown over the years, and you've been kind of a steerer of that program and really have helped develop it. But before we jump into that, pre-need agents, a lot of times are the one and only at their funeral home, and that can be kind of lonely. And you have that experience of being the one and only account executive for Homesteaders. How do you maintain a feeling of connectivity to the core company, to your colleagues? How do you build community? How do you keep from being lonely out in the field?
It can be very lonely. And I always look, every morning when I'd get out of bed and I'd get in the car and I'd go make calls and I'd say to myself, let's go make new friends today.
That is the most Dan Lodemeyer thing I've ever heard you say.
And it's a true story. And also, along with the combination of making friends at Homesteaders Life Company, because there's the folks downstairs who support us from an administrative standpoint and the customer service team. And then as we were appointing agents, I worked real close with licensing and compensation. Those also became my friends in the profession. So I had a combination of working with people out in the field, the funeral homes, and then the support that I was getting back at the home office. So you were either in a funeral home, on your way to the funeral home, or you were pulling up to a payphone at a gas station. Some of you might remember they used to have them on a pole right next to their parking lot. And you would drive right up to the next of it and lower your window down or reach out, and you would grab that payphone, and it was on a cord. You would have a phone card, and you'd punch in about 30 digits to be able to call in and check your voicemail or call customer service and do some follow-up with them with some business that might have come in. So I never really felt this sense of being lonely once I committed to making new friends every single day.
Now you find your people. Yeah. I think we just lost our entire millennial audience when they heard you had to make phone calls. They're like, I'm out. I will text them. There will be no phone calls.
Yeah, there was a different world back then, but it's different today, and it'll be different tomorrow as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about the account executive program, because it's a behemoth today. It is one of the things that sets Homesteaders apart from others in the industry, that we have people, we have boots on the ground, we have those relationships with those funeral homes. And you've been in leadership as that program has developed and grown. Tell me a little bit about what some of the memorable experiences that you've had, both, you know, as an account executive and then growing the program into leadership in your time at Homesteaders.
It was probably a combination of working hard and not working hard. I've learned through the years that there's really two pieces, two components that are important in being successful and that have contributed to the growth of our account executive program. And number one is working hard, and working hard when nobody's watching. If you can do that, and if you can generally be likable, people will want to do business with you if you've got an average product or better. So you've got to be likable. You've got to be able to create this relationship. But when nobody's watching, you got to work hard. And you've got to work. You got to work harder than the next person. And we built a team of people who work hard when nobody's watching them. They don't have to be micromanaged. And there was a day that I may have took advantage of the freedom and independence and the macro management that this company provided us. And then when I decided to own my own accountability and be responsible for my own work ethics, things changed significantly. So it's a combination of just working hard and learning your products and be likable, be sincere with people, and they will want to do business with you. And that's how I grew my territory, and it's how I watched this company grow with its account executive program. There were a lot of vendors in this space calling on funeral homes, casket vendors and fluid vendors, and it was modeling some of their best practices that really helped me in learning how those that were successful out there, how they were getting it done. So
I think one of the things I've learned as I've kind of settled into to my own career is that as much as we talk about making business decisions, we make human decisions. You know, when it comes to who we do business with, we are all creatures that enjoy comfort, and we want to do business with people that make us feel comfortable. And so I think at a core level, that likability plays a huge role. You know, we want to spend time with people that make it easy to spend time with them. And that is true in our personal lives, and it's certainly true also in our business lives. You've talked a lot about making new friends and building those relationships with funeral professionals and in the hustle. You have built a vast network of funeral professionals who know you, like you, respect you. I know you have learned a lot from them. And I'm curious if you have a few standout lessons from funeral professionals that you could share with us.
Well, I was hired by a third generation funeral director, and he saw to it that I went off to their family funeral homes in Northeast Oklahoma, and I volunteered for a couple of weeks. I was on call. I had to go out and assist with the removals if they got a call. I observed them meeting with the family the next morning. Might have had a middle of the night removal. Then you'd meet with that family. I was a fill-in pallbearer. I drove the flower vehicle. I learned the profession by volunteering and being a part of the profession. And it was the best training that I could have ever gotten, because then it taught me the language of funeral service. And so as I started going out making friends, I was talking their talk, using the words that they use, and clearly demonstrating that I understood the profession I was in. And that was funeral service, not the insurance industry.
I feel like if you spend any significant time in a service-leading funeral home, it ruins you for all other service experiences across the board, like restaurants, hotels, any hospitality. If you have spent any amount of time in a funeral home that does it well, it sets such a high bar. It is really hard to see any other industry come close to some of the things that the funeral profession consistently delivers to families. It's really remarkable. And one of those things, I think everyone should spend some time in the funeral home at some time in their life, because there's a lot of lessons there.
Absolutely.
What have you learned about sales and leading a sales organization in your time here?
Well, I've had some great training through the company, which has helped a lot. There's a local organization. I was sent to their training classes, and it was on coaching and best practices and coaching salespeople and being their manager. So that's probably where it started. And then it really clicked when Drake University came in, and the training was set up with them. And it was based off of the Oz principle. And the Oz principle is based on personal accountability. And it also teaches us that the key is not getting stuck in a victim mindset. And that was a game changer for me. I went through that class and I learned about what it means to be a victim, what it means to own the opportunity to move yourself from being a victim to being a component, and that you can actually change from being the victim to somebody who's going to make positive change as a result of what you learn. So that was huge. And then several years went by, and a coworker had demonstrated a process and calling on a funeral home. And it was clear to me that they went through this process to engage with that owner of that funeral home. And when we left, this was a new hire of ours. And I said, you followed the process. It was clear to me. I said, the gentleman we were calling on, he had no idea the process that you were following. I go, but it was clear and it was smooth and I want to know it. And he said, well, I appreciate the compliment. He said it comes from inside out development. Alan Fine is the co-founder of the GROW model. You learn in that training, coaching skills, prospecting skills, how to retain a customer. It's a inside out development for coaching, and it was primarily developed for coaching, but you can use it in every facet of your life. And that was the second most important training that I'd gone through, and I live by it every day. And the GROW model is simply understanding what the goal is of the person that you're talking with. You might have an employee that reports to you who's very frustrated and needs your time and attention, and you just start out with getting to understand, why is it that they came into your office? What's their goal? What is it that they want to get out of meeting with you for the next 10 minutes to an hour it might take? And then the R gets into the realities. You get them to tell you everything that's going on that brought them to make the decision that they wanted to come in and tell you what the goal is. And then you'll discuss with them, well, what are some opportunities? You could throw some of your own solutions out. You get them really to open up on what they think might be an opportunity. And then you both agree together on a way forward. And in most cases, the employee will own that way forward. So it's a process to follow to help the coach, but you can also use the same thing when you're calling on a prospect to understand, what is their goal? What are they currently doing? What would they hope for that they aren't getting out of their program today? And then the two of you can decide, here's what we're going to do moving forward.
I love the use of the GROW model. I actually, one of our team members was in a musical a few weeks ago, and so a couple of us drove up. It was about an hour from here. And my coworker who I was traveling with, she brought her daughter who's in elementary school. And we went out for pizza beforehand, before the musical. And we were sitting there and I was talking to her, her name's Riley, about a ballet that she was in around Christmas time and what role she had had. I was talking to her about what her goals were and where she was today and what she thought she would need to do and develop herself to be able to accomplish to get the role she wanted next year. And we just kind of had a nice conversation, went back to our pizza, and her mom, my colleague, who's gone through the GROW training with me, turned to me and she's like, you just used the GROW model. And I'm like, you know what? I did. I didn't even realize, because when you start to use tools and processes like this, they become embedded into your psyche and you carry them into so many different scenarios. Obviously, this was more of kind of a personal interaction, but it does really change the way that you approach conversations, the way you approach goal setting, the way you approach prospecting and sales. It's been a tremendous tool, I think, for our sales team and personally for me as well.
I agree. And that's why it works, because it's just so natural. It is so easy to use that it just becomes a natural conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
We talked a little bit about service when it comes to spending time in funeral homes and the high bars that they set. What have been some of the lessons you've learned about service in your time at Homesteaders?
Well, number one, when I first got out into the field, there was a gentleman, he was a casket vendor in Northwest Iowa, and he was getting ready to retire. He was going to retire in the next year, and I was just getting started with my career. And the one thing I learned about that individual is that he never gossiped. He never gossiped about one funeral home when he made a call on another funeral home. He didn't talk about where he'd just come from. He had this impeccable reputation of never talking about anybody else in the funeral home that he was in. And I went, you know, when I get to the point where I want to retire and I'm a year out from retiring, if I can have a similar reputation, that's going to be my goal. So early on, I learned from one of the best who was on his way out of the profession as I was coming in. So that was key. I went to a continuing education class because we have an insurance license. We're required to keep a valid insurance license.
All our account executives are required to have that insurance license.
That's right, because you need to know the process of getting appointed with the insurance company, get your license, and also get appointed with the company. So if you've done it, it's a lot easier to help somebody else do it. Mm-hmm. So I went to my first continuing education training class. One of the first things I learned in that class was that the call that you want to make least, the one you're dreading, the one that you just don't want to make, that you want to put off, you should make that call first. There's mm-hmm. been a book written about that. You might have heard about it.
And you've recommended it to me. I can't remember the book's called, but the concept is Eat the Frog.
That's right. Yeah. Who wants to eat a frog? Mm-hmm. Nobody. Anyhow, so that was great training coming for that continuing education class. And I follow that. If I've got a list of 10 phone calls I need to make, the one I make first is the one I want to make least. The other thing that I find out is that what's keeping me from wanting to make that call, or what I'm dreading most about it, in most cases doesn't come true.
Mm-hmm.
In maybe 1 out of 10 of those instances where it really is a difficult conversation. But by picking up the phone and making that call and making the one you want to make lease first, it usually goes a lot easier than what you anticipate it's going to go.
Well, and it gives you such a huge confidence boost too, that like, I can do hard things. Now, everyone who talks to us early in the morning is going to know that we've been dreading that call. But yeah, it's true. It's a great way. Like, I've adopted that in some of, you know, when I have a long to-do list and things that I'm procrastinating or putting off, that's Dan Lodemeyer is in my head saying, eat the frog, Danielle. And it does. It changes your mindset. After you've done the hard thing first, the rest of the day seems easier.
Absolutely. And then just simply following through. Be a person of your word. If you set an expectation, then you need to follow through with the expectation that you set. Not only do you need to follow through, you need to bring something of value, and you need to demonstrate real quick how their world's going to be easier as a result of listening to you and considering doing business with you. If you can establish that in the first 10 seconds, you will get their attention.
Interesting.
They need to know, is my world going to be better?
I don't know if I bring value in the first 10 seconds. Every time I talk to you, I have a new lesson that's going to linger. I'm going to be sitting here 18 months from now coming back to you and being like, I still think about the first 10 seconds of my interactions with people.
So are these Danny-isms?
Yeah, the Dan Lodemeyer lessons for living.
All right.
The last kind of lesson I want to dig into, I've watched you at Homesteaders. I've been here for 9 years now. I've watched you manage people, and I know that you have a very particular style of management, and the way that you approach people leadership is very unique to who you are at your core. That is something that I'm certain was learned and developed over time. But what lessons have you kind of acquired in your time at Homesteaders about leading people, leading a sales organization?
People want to be told that they're doing a good job when they've earned it. Looking people in the eye and being sincere is what's important. But also to remember to learn how to have critical conversations where they don't feel as though they're being attacked, where you're working with them and having a conversation that you're both working towards a solution to doing things differently. And it's how you handle that conversation with somebody. It's, are you bringing them in to work along with you to get to the end goal? Or are you belittling them on what they haven't done right and what they need to change to be better? And then also I've learned from Lyndon Peterson, who's my direct report, he is very calm in his response and he's not quick to react. And he keeps his tone at a very even level. Over 32 years at Homesteaders Life Company, I've done it both the wrong way and I've learned better ways to do it. So a lot of it comes from learning from experiences that you had that you promise yourself you will never let that happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to make a mistake and do it in a way that you're not proud of, as long as you do it differently in the future. And each time you do it differently into where you grow into a way that you are becoming more proud of how you handled it.
There's a great quote from C.S. Lewis. I love it so much. I have it framed in my office, but it's, experience the most brutal of teachers, but you learn. My God, do you learn? And it's absolutely true. Those bad experiences, and we all have them. They're burned in our mind. But it's those moments where you're like, that went so poorly, I'm never doing that again. Or I'm never doing it that way again.
Mm-hmm.
But it sticks with you, and it's such a formative experience. Those failures can be just as powerful as the successes when it comes to the trajectory of your career. You mentioned you've been at Homesteaders 32 years now. It's rare, I think, for people to stay at a single company that long, especially in sales. I think that sales is one of those disciplines that has a little bit more churn. What kept you here? Why Homesteaders?
Well, early on in my career, I had a medical experience where I had a seizure and met with a neurologist, and we had to go through and figure out what was going on. And I had to go on seizure medication. And when you have a documented seizure, you are unable to drive for 6 months. And if you go seizure free on the med, then you are licensed to drive again. Well, I drove for a living and Homesteaders took good care of me. They hired a driver for me to see to it that I could go on my calls during those 6 months where I didn't have a valid driver's license. So that was key number one.
I want to pause there because that's a remarkable story. You're a new account executive, relatively new in your time at Homesteaders. You can't do the job as it's listed in your job description for six
right.
months. And the response
you're right.
you got
I was
from Homesteaders.
New and I wasn't that good at that time.
I'm sure
it's
that's
not
accurate.
Like I was a rock star.
But they hired a driver
they
for
hired
6 months.
For 6 months.
I would never leave that company. Well, I work here now, but I would never leave that company either. That's incredible.
Those were the words my father used with me.
Really?
A little bit of a twist. If you ever decide to leave, don't ever forget this experience, because this is how this company treated you when you needed mm-hmm. them most. So that always weighed heavily on me, on how I was treated when I needed the company most. And that also made a big influence on me on what I then, from that point on, gave back to the company. Because they gave to me more than I could ever give back to them. I had a boss at one time who I would report back in on all the hard work I was doing, and he would always stop and say at the end, "But did you have fun?" And he reinforced that having fun and working hard should always go together.
I love that. I feel like there's a connection there. I do a presentation where I talk about pricing for funeral homes, and one of the things I talk about is leading with service, because service is so much more difficult for your competitor down the street to replicate. And I think what you're talking about, the way that homesteaders took care of you, and honestly, sitting here as someone who also works at homesteaders, the way they've taken care of me and the way I've watched them take care of everyone who works here, there's no other company that can replicate that. The way that you make people feel about how valued they are at your organization, the way that you make them care about your mission, the way that you make them care about each other, the way you take care of your own and establish that culture from the top down, that's really difficult to replicate.
Everybody here cares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's why we stay.
But who at Homesteaders has inspired you? Who have been some of the people that really stood out?
You know, Dan Bax was president and CEO when I first started, and he asked, "What would be more important to you as you grow with this company? Is it the title, or would it be the money that might go with the title? You only get to pick one." He really got me to look inside of myself on what really was important. Graham Cook taught me the communication skills that are important. Judy Ralston Hansen, all things HR. Dean Lambert taught me a lot about listening skills. Tom Heyer was our head of customer service and other departments. He taught me the value in, if you have an issue with a particular employee, don't go to their boss, go to them. If you can't work it out directly with them, then you can bring other people and get them involved. Boy, my list goes on and on. Mm. Jack taught me about having fun. Steve Schaefer on sales process and accountability within our sales organization. It's a long list in 32 years, but all of them have been very significant in what they've brought to me.
I'm curious, if I ask that question of other people at Homesteaders, how many of them would have you on that list? I suspect a humbling amount of people.
Oh, you're too kind.
All right. Well, we'll end with a couple questions we ask everyone on our podcast. The first one is, what are you reading right now? And I've been excited for this question because every time I talk to you, you're reading something new.
Well, right now, today, I'm reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It is a great read. When I got back into reading, I'm like, well, what are you going to read to get your career back in reading started? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to start with Harry Potter. I think it's an easy read. I want to know what it's about. I want to be able to answer a trivia question.
You know, what's interesting, I don't want to segue us too much, but I used to teach a composition class, and the last one they had to write was The Cultural Impact of Harry Potter. And there was a surprisingly high volume of research that points to the Harry Potter series as the catalyst for getting young readers back into reading. I love hearing what you're reading for fun, because I think it's important to do that. But I know you have a very deep backlog of business books you've read and loved over the years. So I'm curious what some of those might be.
Well, I might have started with Swim with the Sharks Without Being Eaten Alive by Harvey McKay. He taught me a lot about creating relationships and developing personal relationships with those people that we're calling on. And I think he has a list of 64 items that you should know about each and every person to get to know them. So that then became my list of things that I would ask people about themselves. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, famous book. John Gordon has written a lot of books. Easy reads. He wrote a book called The Energy Bus, The Compound Effect, Darren Hardy. Jim Collins wrote Good to Great. My all-time favorite, The Boys in the Boat by Daniel James Brown. And it's just a fabulous read. I highly recommend that book. If you only asked me for one recommendation, I think that would have to be it.
All right, one final question. And this is actually my favorite question to ask. What is energizing you right now? When you wake up in the morning, what gives you energy?
Over the years, you've learned how to take care of yourself and not take care of yourself. And taking care of yourself might be diet. It could be exercise. Not doing those things is the opposite. The importance of a good night's sleep is critical. A lot of people look at changes, it's difficult for them to go through any change at all. For me, it's exciting. It energizes me. I think a lot about, and I'm a list maker, so I'm making these lists of things that I want to do that involve the change that has recently taken place there. And it's exciting for me. So take care of yourself, take care of your body, and take care of that your health and your sleep habits. And you'll wake up with more energy than you ever believe that you ever had before.
I have two young children. That sounds delightful. Doesn't always happen that way. But thank you so much for your time, Dan. This was a really fun conversation. And I always learn a lot when I talk to you and always come away with a stack of book recommendations. But I know the people who are listening to our podcast are going to find a lot of value in it too. So I appreciate it. You're very busy. And I know you made a choice to make time for this. And I really appreciate that. So thank you.
You're welcome.